Welcome to the Church Planting Podcast. It's great to have you with us today. This podcast features inspirational insights of church planting practitioners from across North America, and it's brought to you by the Church Planting Group of the North American Mission Board. We want to invite you to visit our website at www.churchplantingvillage.net to discover a host of world-class resources that have been developed for both church planters and those who lead them. Now get ready, because the conversation is about to begin.
Hi, good afternoon. Welcome to building. You can't hear me? Oh, okay. Well, no, this mic is for recording purposes only. So I'll tell you what, this may be kind of like Forrest Gump. At some point I'm going to say, and that's all I got to say about that. And then later when they put this on podcast, you can watch it and go, oh, that's what he was talking about. Well, I'm glad I didn't hear him the first time. But anyway, good afternoon. My name is Michael Daly. I'm with Miami Baptist Association, Director of Church and Community Ministries there. I've been in Miami for almost 23 years now. I was real young, so I've grown up in Miami. But, the laughter reveals that you don't believe that. But anyway, no, but I've enjoyed my ministry in Miami, and one of the reasons why I've enjoyed doing what I do in Miami, working with Miami Baptist Association, is the fact that I've been blessed with an opportunity to get to meet people in a lot of different organizations, agencies, community agencies, secular agencies, Christian agencies, as well as our churches, and also getting to work across denominational lines and various ministries. And through that, be able to develop and build some ministries and bring some resources to bear in ministries that we're doing, that without those kind of connections and that kind of networking would not have been possible, or would not have been possible to the extent that we're doing it. So let me just ask, how many of you here are involved in what you might call collaborative partnerships with other organizations and where you're doing ministry? Okay, quite a few of you. How many of you really don't have too much of an idea about what that's all about? Well, that relieves me a lot, because now I know I can say whatever I want, and you're gonna. But well, unfortunately, we have these other people here who can test me out on this. I have some books that I brought that deal with the issue of collaboration. One of them you're gonna recognize, "Meeting Needs and Sharing Christ," is an excellent foundational book written by Donald Atkinson and Charles Rozell. I know that you know, and talks about, you know, the ways of developing ministries to meet the needs of the needy in your community. But I've got some books here. Some are Christian, some are secular, but they're very good in dealing with the concept of what we call collaboration or building networks, reasons why to do that, what's involved in that, what the advantages are, and building collaborative networks with other agencies in your community. One's got an interesting title, "The Charismatic Organization." I'll have these, and you can look at them later if you want, and maybe write some of them down. You might want to check them out. "Charismatic Organization" talks about organizations that are very effective and the ways that they've become effective. And "Habitat for Humanity" is one that it talks about quite a bit. Habitat is in this other one called "Forces for Good." Both of those are very good. This was a secular approach to the idea, but they're very good in talking about helping to understand what's involved in the whole concept of what collaboration is. This is a good one, Phil Butler, "Well Connected," and he mainly deals with churches and Christian organizations working together to accomplish ministry. This book called "Collaboration," I have to remember the author. His name is Morton Hansen. He has a business approach. He actually did a dissertation on collaboration, because he found it really intriguing that Hewlett Packard developed a lot of success and developed a lot of success through collaboration among their departments, but it was very difficult. They experienced a great deal of difficulty in doing that. That intrigued him so much that he did his doctoral dissertation about it. But his book is intriguing. Churches That Make a Difference is a good one. Ronald Sider and others. And he talks quite a bit in there, especially the latter part of the book, about working together with other community organizations, and reminds us that we don't necessarily have to be thinking about working with Christians or with churches all the time and being able to accomplish what we want to do. Because just think of all the examples in the Bible of how God used those who were really not his children to accomplish kingdom purposes. And of course, that's what our interest is. That's what our heart is, or where our heart is. We're wanting to accomplish kingdom purposes, and that's what the purpose of collaboration is all about. This one gives kind of a scientific approach. Lynn?
Speak a little louder.
Speak louder?
Yeah, people back
here. Oh, okay. Well, this mic is for recording purposes only. But Toby, is there a possibility of... Okay, Toby's going to mic me up. Anyway... So, what are we talking about in regard to what is collaboration? I know we've had that slide up there for quite a while. But what is collaboration? And let me just say this. For one thing, I'm not an expert about this. I don't consider myself an expert. I've got some experiences to share. And that's mainly what I want to do. And perhaps at some point, we might even turn this into the kind of conference where it's more like, can we just talk and kind of share? And there could, you know, I'm all for the idea of people sharing back and forth about your own experiences and, you know, building on each other's knowledge. That's very effective. But I've got this PowerPoint presentation to serve as an outline for this, to take us through as a guide to talk about some of the issues and elements and components involved in some of the collaborative relationships that I've been involved in. But collaboration, to give it to sum it up into a definition, we can say that collaboration is two or more organizations, two or more parties on mission together, enabling each other to accomplish individual mission objectives. Now, let me ask you, is that clear to you what I'm trying to say? In other words, in collaboration, there's the reason for coming together is there's a mission, there's a vision, there's something that we want to accomplish. God has given us a vision, and you know, for his kingdom. And of course, you know, that's the overarching vision anyway, is building God's kingdom. But within your work, within your context, where you are, I'm sure that God has given you a vision, or God will be giving you a vision about who's there, who we have in our community, who can we reach out to and bring into the kingdom of God? Who can we reach out and touch and make their life better, and in the process of that, bring them into the kingdom of God? And in approaching that from the perspective or with the the work of collaboration, as you've developed that vision, and as God gives you the vision, then it... Okay. How do I put that
right
on?
Here.
Right here. Sorry about that. Like that? Oh. Am I on? All right.
Flip that to yourself.
Okay. Well, let me take the phone off. Okay, sorry. I hope I don't turn it off and process everything. Did I just turn it off? All right. Did I turn it back on?
No.
No.
They always assign
the
hard ones.
Collaboration. There we go.
Yeah.
All right, I'll try not to touch any buttons as I put this on.
Is that collaboration right there?
That was collaboration. Anyway. In your organization, you have a mission. You have a vision. Your organization has a reason for being. In fact, for every church, a church probably or should have, and it's bylaws, the church constitution and bylaws has a mission statement. The reason why you exist, and serve. And so in collaborating and coming together and developing a vision with another organization, with a community organization, other churches, that collaboration in itself should serve to develop and build the vision and mission of your organization, of the organization's original mission in the first place. And to help give some light on that, well, let me just say it this way. Each organization should maintain its distinctiveness, its own distinct identity in the process of coming together in a collaboration. When you collaborate, that doesn't mean now that your organization now is absorbed into the collaboration, that your ministry, that the association, the church, or whatever incorporated ministry you may have, now gets absorbed into a collaboration. But each one maintains its own distinctiveness, maintains its own purpose, its own identity, and the collaboration itself then should build that identity, should make that identity more complete. And to give an example of that, we have a clinic, and some of you I know that know about it, a clinic called Good News Care Center. And I've got different handouts, and I've got an article about the Good News Care Center, and at some point you might want to pull it out. You can't miss it. It's got my picture on there. But anyway, it's not to promote me, but it was an article that was done in Miami Monthly Magazine. And so I wanted you to see that even though I told them about our gospel ministry and what we're doing to reach people for Christ at the same time that we're helping people with their healthcare needs, they didn't cover that too much, but at least they got it just a little bit, because on the cover you can see it says spreading the good news and more. So they do allude to that, and that's a good thing. See, we're making an impact for the gospel in everything that we're doing. But in developing the Good News Care Center, over the years we've had a number of different organizations that are working with us. Some have come, some have gone, but in every respect, the ones that have come in to work with us, for instance, right now we have Nova Southeastern University. We used to have the University of Miami. The things that Nova Southeastern University wants to accomplish, or the University of Miami, the University of Miami School of Nursing, is they train students. And that's what they're all about, and that's the reason why they're involved primarily in community clinics. Certainly they want to help people. Certainly they want to provide quality medical care. But their main purpose, or their main mission, is to train students. So in coming to work with us in Good News Care Center, we gave them the opportunity, the platform, to train more students than they were training in other settings that they had throughout the county. And in some cases, in some years, they were training more students in our clinic than they were in those others combined. So you see, at the same time that they were coming to work with us and to be part of our vision and our ministry of reaching people, in our case, reaching people for Christ and providing help to people with their physical needs, they were doing that. They were joining in with us on that. And at the same time, they were accomplishing their mission objectives, and even in a much better way and a more full way than they were if they weren't doing that. So really, when we talk about collaboration, for me, it's all about vision. And the writers of these books talk about the same thing. It's all about your vision. And we can define collaboration a number of different ways. My friend Mason Van Tassel used to be in Miami Baptist Association. He's there. I saw him come in. Maybe he left out. I go, oh, there he is back there. Now, see, Mason might say that good collaboration would be if he and I go to lunch and I buy, that's good collaboration. You agree with that, Mason? And there's all kinds of definitions for collaboration. Really, what we're talking about, or what I'm talking about, is the vision, the mission, what it is that you want to accomplish in reaching the people where you are. What is your ministry calling? And what is the vision of that? What vision has God given you? How can that advance God's kingdom? And in doing that, who out there has resources, has capacity that could come in and join in with you, with me, and doing that, that if they weren't there, would make it much more difficult, if not impossible, for us to accomplish what we're doing. And so the vision is the inspiration for collaboration, and it is what empowers the collaboration. Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. Can I do it just like that? There. As we said, each organization has mission objectives to fulfill. And because of that, we don't collaborate just to collaborate. Now, through the years, I've had people come to me from different organizations saying, especially in regard to the clinic, but and with other things too, just in working in Miami Baptist Association. And the approach has been kind of like this. Listen, we're applying for some grant funding, and we'd like to include you in the grant proposal, especially in regard to the clinic. We'd like to include you in the grant proposal, and here's what we want to do. And in describing what they want to do, it doesn't have anything to do with what we want to do. So don't get blinded by money. You know, and I'm sure many of you are probably going to attend Kathy Miller's workshops on grant writing. You know, she's going to emphasize the mission and vision and keeping everything directed toward that. Keep the main thing, in other words. And don't get sidetracked by peripheral things that you can get involved in that don't really have to do anything to do with the main purpose of your mission. But keep it focused on what God has called you to do. And so I've turned down organizations, and sometimes they're pretty bewildered about that. You know, why would you turn this down? Well, because it's like this. If we get this money, we have to spend this money according to the way that the foundation wants us to spend that money, which is to accomplish something that's going to take a lot of time and energy and will actually impede us being able to go forward and accomplish what we really do want to do. So I don't know if any of you have had that kind of experience or how much of experience you've had with grant writing and receiving grants from foundations. But the issue many times is not just the dollars that are available, the resources that are available, but whether or not those resources really apply to helping you accomplish what it is that you want to do and what your mission is all about. Another thing is that, I'm saying it's not mindless but planned, and coming together, there are sound business principles to this. I'm going to talk about contracts, letters of intent, or letters of cooperation that we can write that help guide the relationship. And there has to be a structure to the relationship, a way to deal with problems, issues that may come up within the collaborative relationship, and to resolve those issues. And many times, either a contract or what you might write in a letter of intent or a letter of agreement of collaboration or participation is the tool that you can use to guide that. Because I can tell you, unless your organization is different from ours and the organizations you come in contact with, there's sometimes people in there that are not perfect. And sometimes, you know, everything doesn't just flow the way you want it to, and many times relationships can become a bit touchy. And the thing that can help resolve issues that may take place or friction that may develop from just a lot of people coming together to work together are those letters of agreement and contracts that you can develop. I want to call your attention to, while we're talking about this, to a couple articles. I don't know. I know you got a lot of papers there. One of them has me in the picture, and I'm bent over there. It's not my best pose, but I'm bent over there looking at some debris on the ground. And then there's a letter. The one of them's an article, and then there's this letter, and it's written to Homestead Housing Authority. The article that I'm referring to is about a migrant church a church that we developed in a migrant camp. It's called the Everglades Camp. Miss Al Castillo knows the camps that we have in Miami real well. But the Everglades Camp is a place where a lot of migrants live, and they travel up and down the migrant stream. We encounter a lot of different problems and social situations. When I first tried to develop ministry there, way back in the late 80s, I contacted this person whose name is Cipriano Garza, who is the director of the Dade County Migrant School Program, and told him, you know, about our churches and the fact that we wanted to do ministry with the migrants and help, and enumerated some of the ways that we could help. I said, you know what we'd really like to do? And the persons in the community told me he was the one to contact. I said, what we'd really like to do is we'd like to acquire a trailer that, you know, down there in the camp so that we could have set up a church and we can provide food and a lot of different social services the way I packaged it. And at that time he told me, he said, well, I'm sorry, but these trailers are only to be used for migrant housing. We can't allow them to be used for anything else. Well, as time passed, we had an opportunity to do ministry in the camp, and we maintained contact with him and involved him in that. And one of the things that worked really, really well was taking some children, working through him and taking some children from that camp and one of the other migrant camps to the migrant children's Christmas camp at Lake Yale. And so we took these kids up there, and the result of that was so wonderful. I mean, these kids were made contact, had pen pals with other children that they met in the camp, and they let him know about that. And their parents were so happy and everything that made such a good impression. And he said, he came back to me and he said, I'll tell you what, he says, no matter what you all want to do, he said, I'll give you carte blanche. You see, by collaborating with him, by working with him, we developed relationships with him and with the people. The only reason we were able to take these kids to the camp is because we met with the parents, because he invited them, because they knew him and trusted him. So he opened the doors for us to be able to establish relationships with the families who lived there. And then as those relationships grew and strengthened, and it was as a result of us doing ministry and helping some with some bills that they owed, as we were able to, or providing food, and he realized, Mr. Garza realized that, or understood all about all the ministry that we were doing, then that you know, opened up the doors for us to be able to establish more. So he gave us permission, or he led the way in us being able to get permission to have a trailer inside the camp, in which we established a little mission church, where we could do counseling, special events, and all that. And we did that. And then Hurricane Andrew came through and blew our little church away. And so that picture is of me looking down and seeing the remainder of what our ministry was. And I thought, as difficult as that was, that's going to be real difficult to ever establish that again. Well, roll the clock forward several years, and now we have a mission church and another migrant camp. We've actually worked with some other organizations, but who are interconnected. And because of the ministries, the Mobile Dental Project, you know, in other words, working with the agencies, the organizations who are in charge, who have authority for working in the communities where we wanted to go. And I'm specifically speaking about the migrant farm worker community now. In Miami, that's huge. During the peak of the season, which we're into that right now, there's about 50,000 of the migrant farm workers and their families living in Miami-Dade County. So it's a huge community, and certainly we want to reach them. We want to do all that we can. They suffer from many different kinds of social problems, social issues, and we want to make an impact in that, and we are. And so now, because we've come back, and again, through doing ministry, and by doing that, by coordinating with the agencies who are there, who are in charge of the facilities and in those communities, and establishing relationships with them and keeping those relationships vibrant, we've been able to reestablish a new church, and we just kept the same name, La Misión Bautista Esperanza en Cristo. Actually, we call this community ministries. Ministerios Comunitarios. And the reason why is because, you know, again, it's working with the people that are there and according to their needs. The person that we're working with, primarily with two organizations, Sembrando Flores is the name of the one, it means planting flowers, and the other one is Homestead Housing Authority. And they said, because other churches might become jealous of the fact that the Baptists are the only ones that have a church inside the camp, they just asked me not to call it a Baptist church, but just to call it community ministries. Because she says, we let them do community ministries too, they just don't get to come in and use the facility every Sunday for church services. And what's really been wonderful about this is, by being there, see, it's so great to be there because that gives us identity. We have identity in this camp. And because we have identity, and we stress the fact we're working with Sembrando Flores, we're working with Homestead Housing Authority, we're here by their permission and with their mercy and grace and all that, we're here, you know, we're here as being part of them. We are part of their organization. Then, in that context, then we gained instant trust with the people who live there, and we have been, there's nobody who lives in the migrant camp that does not know us. And in fact, there's two camps that we're involved in, and everybody knows about our church and our ministry. And so the ministry and the work is growing. We have new people visiting every single Sunday. So, but all that was possible because of collaborating with the organizations and the agencies that are involved there, and by developing strategies and working with them and their strategies to help them. See, we're actually helping Homestead Housing Authority because we're helping residents. You know, we've been able to help some with rental assistance. We've had mission groups come and go in and do repair work in some of the facilities. They're responsible for the repair work on the inside. So we're helping to keep up the facilities. We're providing food. We've been able to provide some rental assistance. So by doing that, we're also doing ministry to the organizations that are involved. So you can see the interconnectedness in that and how that's worked. But it's allowed us, by us work coming alongside and working with them in their ministry and doing it in an organized way and a planned way, then that's helped them be able to accomplish their mission objectives. What they're about. So good collaboration allows organizations to achieve their vision by facilitating and strengthening individual organizational missions. Anybody have any questions or comments about anything said so far? And can you see that by working together in that collaborative way and that through that collaborative framework, that allows for us all to be able to accomplish much more, not only together in a specific mission, but also for our own individual organizations. It allows us to be able to develop more. And we're able to utilize resources from Homestead Housing Authority and from Sembrando Flores in this context and the things that we want to do. We've been able to get them to do things to help us in our ministry there, because they consider us to be part of the team. So we help ourselves while providing a platform for accomplishing larger objectives through working together collaboratively. Each organization needs to contribute, but each needs to benefit from the relationship. And so that's real important. That's essential. If you're in a relationship that's not beneficial, then we'd call that dysfunctional. Or at least people have a license to use that word. Licensed counselors. Anyway, no, you don't want it to be a dysfunctional relationship. You want it to be very functional. It maximizes the effective use of resources. See, back to thinking about it. Well, let me talk about another organization that we're involved with, Church World Service. And World Relief. I want to talk about World Relief first. Back in the late 80s, we had a huge influx of Nicaraguan refugees come to town, and many of them arrived in Brownsville, Texas by hitchhiking. So they only came with clothes on their back. And the good judge, federal judge in Brownsville, decided that he knew that they all wanted to go to Miami. So every day he was putting them on buses and sending them to Miami, Florida. And they were arriving in Miami, Florida. And two main organizations who work with the State Department, now Homeland Security, who deal with those issues, or deal with persons coming in for, you know, refugees, some refugee situations or immigrants, is our Church World Service and World Relief. And we work with both of those organizations. Right now, I'm on the board, an advisory board for Church World Service, and I have a great relationship with them. Well, World Relief, here's what happened with them. World Relief was able to receive funding from the State Department, in which they could, that funding could be used for providing needs, developing an infrastructure for providing the needs for the people. But World Relief did not have within itself the capability of setting up any kind of an infrastructure. So the director of World Relief at that time, his name was Tom Willey. Tom called me and says, "Mike, I can get this grant money from the State Department, which you guys can't receive, but I can." But he said, "But I don't know." He said, "We can't really use it." He said, "Can you think of what we could do?" And I said, "Yeah, I've just been asking the State Florida Baptist Convention and the North American Mission Board," back that time, Home Mission Board, "for a lot of money for food, because what we're trying to do, we're, you know, our churches are really getting involved in ministry and helping many of these folks." But I said, "You know, we need food." And I said, "What would really benefit us is if we had some way to organize a large-scale food distribution. That is, have a crew who is in charge of taking the food, putting the putting packages together, organizing that, and then getting that to the churches so that they can distribute it to the people, and, you know, put together a large organization, some paid people and some volunteers, and, you know, we could really do something really effective there." And he said, "Great." He said, "Well, I've got the money." So what we did, that's what we did. We put together a large-scale food distribution in which we used State Department funds, only it came, that money was spent through World Relief, and then we got the money for food, and we put this all together, and we had a major food distribution ministry that was really effective, really powerful. And I'm trying to remember, I know there were over 1,000 professions of faith. I can't remember how many exactly, and many of these people ended up in churches. I went to the churches and took pictures of some of them getting baptized, and I know that our churches were extensively involved in the ministry to these people, and many of them are in our churches today, all because of that food distribution ministry, which was really powerful and effective, which we would not have been able to put together. We could get hunger funds. But to have a structure, an infrastructure together like that, so it was coordinated as well as it was something that we were able to accomplish because we had a relationship with World Relief. You in your context may not have World Relief or Church World Service, but who else, you know, who else can you think of in the community where you are that you might be able to collaborate in some similar way to be able to utilize the resources that they have? And so that you can maximize the resources that you have so that together you can accomplish much more than what you would be able to do on your own, and in fact may not even be able to do on your own without having those resources. That's what I mean by maximize is effective use of resources. Another way to think about that is economies of scale. That's economists like to talk about economies of scale. And, you know, consider Ford and General Motors. Okay, both of them have experienced, you know, really severe financial problems and the threat of, you know, of going bankrupt. And imagine that. Who would have thought a few years ago General Motors would ever face, you know, serious bankruptcy? But the truth of the matter is, and Ford, I guess, is doing better than General Motors, but the truth of the matter is that neither one of them would have been able to survive even with government backing and with the assistance that they've received, if they didn't have what we call tremendous economies of scale. That is, the capacity to be able to withstand and endure really severe hardship, really severe economic times. And that, in many ways, is what good collaboration produces for us. Good News Care Center, our budget shows that we spend over $10 million a year in Good News Care Center. Now, our actual cash budget is over $600,000. But in the operation itself, through the collaboration that comes from the specialists that receive our patients and provide the care that they provide, from Baptist Hospital with all the lab work, the pharmaceuticals, the surgery, and all the other medical services that are provided through Baptist Hospital and the other hospitals. And tracking that, one can see that it's massive, the amount of resources that are brought to bear on our clinic, on our little clinic situation, which, you know, would be a laugh. It would be impossible to think or to consider that any of that would be possible in any way, shape, or form if we just simply had a clinic ministry where we had a couple rooms and a church set aside. And that's great. That's wonderful. I'm not denigrating that idea. I'm just saying that because we do have that collaborative relationships, it's incredible. It's amazing the amount of resources that we're able to bring to bear on that situation of providing health care for those who don't have health insurance in Miami-Dade County, which, you know, otherwise would be impossible. And it's great for the hospital and for the medical providers as well, because it takes those people, those patients, out of the most costly scenario of providing medical care, which is primarily through the emergency room, et cetera, and allows them to have maintenance care where, you know, we keep them healthy so that they don't go to the emergency room. Now, I put this down here about Steve Jobs and iPod against Sony Connect. Are any of you familiar with that story or with about Steve Jobs? Steve Jobs, when he first came, was first part of Apple. I guess he was pretty much of a renegade. And you can read about that in this Red Book. I enjoyed his analysis of that. Anyway, Steve Jobs was a renegade, and I guess when they were developing the Apple computer, he set aside a separate building for them and even put up a pirate's flag and said, "We're pirates. You know, we're going to take over the company," basically. So what happened to Steve Jobs was, after developing Apple computer and everything, Steve Jobs was out. And then later, Steve Jobs comes back, and voila, they're developing the iPod after the Sony Walkman. And then Sony got involved with it and tried to become competitive through the product they called Kinect. And the difference was collaboration. The new Steve Jobs, or Steve Jobs that came back, did an excellent job of allowing the organizations, the departments within Apple to function together very well. They had tremendous trust, open communication, all the different departments, the technology people, all the different technologies that were involved, developing the interfaces to make the iPod work, because it's a complicated piece, but they made it work so that they took something that's very complicated technically and made it easy for the consumer. I suppose I could even use one. I don't know. I bought one for my wife, but, well, I do have I got the iPhone, but I don't have an iPod. But anyway, but, you know, the thing about it is that was done because of good collaboration. Now, that's in a company, that's in an organization, but it's helpful to read that to understand the concepts of how good collaboration works and what that can produce. And when people come together, relate well together, and develop trust, there's trust in the relationship, and those who have different kinds of skills and different kinds of resources come together and share that in an open way, and in a way that works to the benefit of everyone, so that produces a very powerful result. And so the Sony Kinect, it was quite the opposite story, and they ended up not doing well in the market, where the iPod, you know, has, you know, there's, I don't even have any idea what the figures are now on sales of iPods. But so good collaboration will produce creating good fellowship and opens doors to further collaboration. You know, as we collaborate with organizations that we're working with in Miami-Dade County, working with Church World Service. Church World Service has been helping us. We've been helping Church World Service in various ways through our churches, sending volunteers, helping them to deal with the people that they're working with, helping with financial needs with some of the refugees that are coming in. And now Church World Service is also helping us in the migrant community by bringing people from their legal department down to help some of the migrants to go through legal processes that they qualify for. We've helped open the door to that because we're already there, but because they also want to be there and help, that's made it possible for them to do that, but that's also helping to build our ministry. So you see, it builds back and forth. They send patients to Good News Care Center, and we also send people from Good News Care Center to Church World Service, to their legal department, so that they can receive assistance. And again, it's all because of relationships, and it's all because of sharing resources and understanding how to work together. The thing about it is over time, it almost becomes like you're just all part of the same family. I can go to Church World Service, I can go to Health Council of South Florida, several other places, and when I walk in, it's like, they all come to see me, and it's like, hey, where you been? It's almost like I've been out of the office for a while, because we've gotten to know each other so well and work together in so many things. It's like we're all part of the same organization. Stimulates creativity and vision for new ministries by working in collaboration. There's many other ways in which I've just talked about in which you can develop new things just because you're already collaborating. And I like that collective IQ idea, the multiplier effect, where collaboration breeds new collaboration, creates new opportunities for doing more, and building the kingdom community. You see, here's the thing. As we're working with these secular organizations, many cases, some of them are specifically Christian that we're working with, that I've already talked about, but many that I've worked with are not Christian. But look, we're bringing them into the setting where we're working and working together and utilizing their resources to help us in our main objective, which is to reach people for Christ, which is building kingdom communities. And again, bringing resources to bear on helping to build the kingdom of God. And that's what really is taking place through collaboration. Okay, this thing's not collaborating. Here we go. Okay, I think that's my next slide anyway. Focuses on meeting real needs supported by research and experience. And I'll get into that. What time are we supposed to end? That's 3:15, right? Okay. See, when you're working together with organizations that are out there in the community and you're learning from them, whether you do a community needs assessment or not, and I'm going to talk about doing a community needs assessment, in a modified way, you are doing a community needs assessment, because you're getting to know the people who are working in the community, who know the community, who know the needs, who also know about other resources. And so you're at the same time that you're getting to know the people in the community, in these agencies, you're getting to know more about the community. And so therefore, you're doing research. That results in good research, which it's a good idea to do that in a more formal way and write it down and have a record of that. But nevertheless, that's what that produces. It makes those being served real winners in the process. See, the people that we're serving in the migrant camp or the refugees that come, and those are only a couple of different situations developing English as a second language ministries, all that, and working with agencies who want to refer people to us, and working with their clients and helping, quote unquote, their clients with those needs, results in those clients being the real winners, because this allows for them to have access to a whole lot more service, a whole lot more ministry, and a lot more resources than otherwise they would have access to. And so, remember, the customer is not us, but those needing our help, because Jesus said, I came to serve. And service has to be at the core, or it won't work. Now, when I talk about service, I'm talking about not only those that we're wanting to do the ministry to, but also those who are in the agencies, the social agencies that we're wanting to work with, because we want to help them meet their needs. And by doing that, we are creating strong relationships with them. And that is consistent with what the gospel teaches. Oh, okay. Good collaboration. That's kind of a sensitive thing. It won't disappear now, will it? Oh, okay. Now how do I... Oh. I've only had this computer since 2006. Mr. Al was talking the other day about how some of the guys he's working with, he said they're really feeling good that they're going to school, going to classes, and he said they show up to classes and they carry a laptop computer. He said they don't know how to turn on the laptop computer, but they kept bringing it in. I said, well, I kind of remember when I used to do that. I would take one with me to meetings, and then I'd have somebody who was there use it. Anyway, Mason remembers that. Who are the champions? When I'm talking about champions, representatives from each entity who will be actively engaged in executing the mission and making sure that it works, and need to maintain good communication among participants. Every collaborative relationship or every organization needs to have somebody who's going to be the champion for the ministry and who will be the one who will take the leadership and be the front person, the key person, in maintaining the relationships with those in the agencies. In some cases, in Miami, that's me. In other cases, I've got people now who are working with me in the migrant ministry who are doing a whole lot more and helping to maintain the relationships with the folks that we're working with in these other agencies than I do. And that's really good because they, have a knack for that, have a gift for knowing how to work with other persons in those contexts. So it's important to enlist them. But thinking about, like the clinic, the Good News Care Center, when I was involved in starting that, from the time that we had the opportunity, way the Good News Care Center got started was doing health fairs in conjunction with dental projects in the migrant camps. In the daytime, we did dental clinics because we were going to keep the van or the bus in the migrant camps at night, had a place to keep it there. I decided maybe we could do health fairs in the evenings. So I contacted the University of Miami School of Medicine and asked if they had any medical students that they'd like to send down and we could do health fairs for the migrants. And that they had never done that, and so they were curious about that, and just curious enough that they decided, well, we want to go and investigate that. So they came down. They discovered such huge needs. For instance, one of the tracks, one of the components of care that were provided were pap smears for the women. The medical professor, called me after we were done, and he said, thank me for that. He says, he said, we learned something new. He said, we had never thought about, doing a health fair in that community. We didn't really know anything about that community. And he said, and we never thought about working with churches before in this. And he said, so you've shown us something new. And he said, I think that this is something that we might be able to continue. I'd be interested in that. And he said, do you think it'd be possible for a church to set aside space that we could bring some medical equipment and share the space during the time that we're there conducting the medical clinic? We'll have our equipment out, and we'll utilize those rooms. Then when we're done, we can pack it up, move it to the side, and the church can use it for church purposes. And I said, that is a great idea. And he said, well, here's one of the main reasons why. He said, we had a lot of women who showed up for these pap smears. And he said, many of them were in their 30s and 40s, already had several children, and for the majority, that was the first time they had ever had that exam in their lives. And he said, most of them did not know what to expect. He said, so that reveals to us the intense needs that exist within that community. One, for actual health care itself, physical exams for provision of health care. The other is for health care education. And he said, and that's where the church can come in. He said, one, for providing space, but also for giving us access to the communities. And he said, maybe you have some people who could serve as interpreters. You know, we've got a lot of students that only speak English. They come down and working through interpreters could do excellent health education. And you could facilitate that. I said, oh, I'm getting all goosebumpy. You know, I was just getting excited as he talked about that. And I've told this before, and you know, it's true. I just felt in my bones and my heart of hearts, you know, people talk about having a calling. God's never called me to a pastorate. And so I've sensed a call to ministry. I've never sensed a call to a pastorate. But I got to tell you that I know in my heart of hearts that at that moment, I felt called to start a clinic. I felt called into healthcare ministry. That's what I felt was a calling. And so because of that, yeah, you could say I was the champion for this healthcare ministry. And for it, from that conversation to the day that we opened up the clinic was 7 years. So it took 7 years to get the clinic open. And I was talking to my mother one time after we got it open, and she says, you know, I was talking about that, and she said, you hung with that all these years. And I said, yeah. And I said, well, there wasn't ever a reason to quit. And she said, well, Michael, there were several times during the years I thought you were crazy. And I said, what? What do you mean? And she said, well, because you kept talking about this clinic like it already existed. And she said, there was no clinic. All I kept thinking was, okay, yes, but there is no clinic. And she said, but you kept seeing this clinic. And I said, yeah. I said, well, I just knew that there was going to be one. And she said, well, I know you did. But she said, not too many other people did. And that was true of two bosses who, you know, I'd sit there in staff reports and talk about the progress on the clinic. And, well, that's good. I'm glad to hear it. And those guys. But you see, when God gives you a vision and a mission, and if it's God that's really doing it, he's going to see it through. And he's going to provide all kinds of resources and wonderful things along the way. But the great thing about that is that I discovered in the process was this, what we call collaboration, that he brings many people in our way to enable us to be able to accomplish that. And it's surprising just exactly many times how that works. But in each one of those situations, for the Miami Baptist Association, I represented the champion for our part of that collaboration. With the other organizations we've been involved in, and over the years, those champions have changed, but we've been able to come together and be able to work in a harmonious way and in a way that accomplishes the best results for all of us and makes it, you know, like I said, just like a family situation. Well, there are structure and relationship issues. If you're not incorporating as a new entity, then you need to. Then there needs to, somebody needs to surface to be the lead agency. And we made a major mistake starting out with the Good News Care Center, I believe. Mason may agree with me. And that we had some excellent instruments in place. If you want to pull this up, one up says agreement between Dade County AHEC program and Miami Baptist Association. And I also have another letter that's to Father Jose Luis Menendez and Maria Teresa Valdez. What these are two samples of ways to develop infrastructure with those with whom you're working. This one, we agreed on the one letter. I agreed to assist them. Now, Good News Care Center had already been in existence for a good number of years by the time we had this opportunity to work with another organization, Catholic organization, and helping them establish a clinic in their community. This eventually did not work, but another clinic that was already in existence has come over into their facility. But I was willing to work with them in these ways and help lead them through and direct them through a process of developing a clinic. And Good News Care Center was going to be working in a collaborative fashion to conduct that. But with an in-kind donation value, you could say, of $10,000, which they could then take and present to, as a matter of fact, Allegheny Franciscan Ministries as support for a grant that they were seeking. And again, it turned out that things worked out in a different way. But that was one way we were doing that. And this outlined the structure. This showed what our responsibility, my obligation, or what I was committing to help them. Now, with the Dade County AHEC, it was much more involved. We received from them a full-time physician who served as both our medical director and full-time physician, but also for Dade County AHEC was their main, what they call preceptor, physician preceptor. So that doctor was the one who was in charge of training the students and therefore was the one that's supervising the student rotations. So for AHEC, the doctor was conducting student rotations and overseeing that. For Miami Baptist Association, was providing us a medical director and a full-time physician. And together, we put together a clinic and ran a clinic together. Now, we set up a board that where it was kind of like it wasn't a governing board in the sense that we were separately incorporated, but kind of like for buddy-buddy relationships. And over time, as things can happen, some friction developed, disagreement about how to go on in the future. And because we took our eyes off of this instrument here and had it on the board, we experienced some conflict and a severity of conflict, I guess you could say, that we probably could have avoided if we just simply pulled this up and said, here is our agreement. This is what we've agreed to do. It's working very well for both of us. You know, it's working well for your situation. It's also working well for ours. And it quite clearly says that you understand that you are working with Miami Baptist Association in its Good News Care Center. If you look down there in the third line, third whereas, says a physician to provide community-based primary health care services to people seeking care in its Good News Care Center, and goes on and on. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is many times it is good to operate with a contract when you're going into a collaborative relationship and you get that far with it, because this helps stipulate what the limits are to people's responsibilities. It clarifies what people's commitments are, and it serves as an instrument to help when the times of friction come. This is what you can refer to kind of keep things together and keep things going forward in a smooth way. And so it's good to have use contracts and that kind of thing. And that was generated by them. We openly agreed to it. We agreed to it without hesitation. Why? Because it was something. There was nothing in here that we would not want to agree to. There was nothing in there that was not correct. But you can create a contract in a lot of different ways, and perhaps maybe want, if it is a serious enough situation, want to get the assistance of an attorney to help stipulate those things that you want to have in a contract. But it does set boundaries and timelines. Okay. And helps explain how this relationship will function. And again, that differs with each type of collaborative partnership and setting. Some are very simple, and some are, like in a clinic setting, are more complex. There's more laws, more legal issues involved, that kind of thing. But in every situation, you need to have a clarity in regard to what the relationship's all about. And a letter of interest, the one that I wrote to Homestead Housing Authority, my mind has gone blank on the director's name, but it's at the top there. Anyway, it's the one about the migrant camp. Okay, that was pretty simple, but as you can see, I was very clear in what we said we wanted to do. We wanted to have Bible studies. We want to have worship services. We want to do all those things. So I was very clear up front in saying what we wanted to do, but I reminded him of the collaboration we'd already been involved in some of the good that had resulted from that, to give a rationale and a good argument as for why we should get permission to do this. And then you can see his response, which is photocopied on the back part, on the back page, is that he was very open to that and wholeheartedly welcomed us in that regard. And why? Because we already had a good relationship. We've already done things together. And because of those things, he knows who we are and knows he can trust us. And I have to say, though, that they've not allowed any other church group. Churches go in there and do short-term projects, take in a tent and all that certainly allow that. But there is no other church that has that kind of relationship with them. That's why we've been able to accomplish it. So structure and relationship issues. You want to clearly establish the parameters among the participating organizations and churches. Make that clear. Good collaboration focuses on meeting real needs then through research and experience, borrowing from the experience of those that you'll be involved with. Makes those being served the real winners in the process. Oh, wait a minute. What did I do? Go backwards? Yep. So now getting started. Community needs assessments. How many of you have ever done a community needs assessment? Okay, just a few. So, okay. And community needs assessment is a lot of work, but it's worthwhile. It helps establish the needs, reveal resources, and helps develop next works. So I'm saying next on the show how it's done. We got about half an hour. I will really be a techno after today. Purposes of a community needs assessment. One is to learn about community services, to get out there and find out. You know, we talked about collaboration and that involves working with other organizations. Well, this is a tool, an instrument for being able to learn about who is out there and what they're doing. Access community problems and unmet needs. Be able to identify and understand what issues the agencies are dealing with. Many times we think we may know what the problems are in a community, but there are many times a lot of hidden problems. I didn't realize, not to the extent that I know it now, just how severe drug addiction, sexual abuse, domestic violence and incest and all these things are in the migrant community. Those are very serious issues that many social agencies are working to deal with, and the school system too. And so some of what we're doing and ministering to families is working not directly in doing that, but we're serving as referring women that come to us and say and reveal to some of the women in our church about some things that are going on, helping them gain access to some resources to assist them with that, and other things, dealing with drug addiction and all that. But in meeting with community agency directors, you get to know about a lot of the needs in the community that otherwise are not readily apparent. Establish relationships with community agencies and organizations, which again, we've already discussed all the reasons why that's important. And determine how Christians and churches can become involved in ministry. In other words, God can begin developing in your church and among all of you his vision, the vision that he has for the community. And so therefore, the place that he has for you and what he wants you to do and being able to realize his vision. And so that's what we can do. And then it's also real important in doing this that I remember how Mason, when he was putting together financial reports, he was the administrator. Now he lives up there in North Carolina, South Carolina. Oh, well. North Carolina's pretty. No, just... I know North Carolina a little better. But anyway, Mason was our business administrator at Miami Baptist Association for a good number of years. And I remember when he was putting together these financial reports for the administrative committee, how a lot of times he looked kind of like that. And, you know, you don't want to look like that. That's actually a picture of Mason on Monday morning before the administrative committee. But anyway, stress happens when we try to do it all ourselves. So therefore, networking and collaboration are good strategies, and doing community needs assessment is an excellent strategy or an excellent tool for being able to help do all that. So now, I'm going to get us out of here. And if you have this nice, pretty blue handout, I thought I had a copy of it. Anyway, it's the beginning of the instruction. And this was actually, well, I thought I had a copy up here. Oh, well. It's actually the instruction. Yeah, that piece right there, if you just hold that up. This is just part of what Gene White has put together for got a few extras. If anybody doesn't have it, Misael has some. Let me just have one so I can kind of refer to it. Community Assessment Manual. This is available through the North American Mission Board. And I can send it to you by email. If you want to give me your email address, I'll send it to you as an attachment. But or you can just go to nam.net and be able to download it. And it's an excellent tool for taking a church, the association of the church, whoever, through the community needs assessment process. And then I also have provided a copy of a community needs assessment that I did. So just so you can see that and see how that, you know, at least one form, one version of that. But this is good because it helps with the preparation steps to doing the community interviews. When we're talking about doing a community needs assessment, we're talking about going out and interviewing people in a variety of walks, a variety of disciplines, from the police, real estate people, schools, community agencies, other churches, include them all, and you know, and so that you can get as much perspective and as much insight about the community as possible, the insights and perspective from a lot of different people who are involved in a lot of ways. And real estate organizations, they can tell you a whole lot about what's happening in the community, what the plans are. Going to the planning department, zoning and planning department is good for that too. But you can get an idea about who's moving in, who's moving out, what the values of properties are doing, things like that. The police certainly can give a lot of insight. And virtually every case, every one of these that I've done, I found the people in these agencies and these different organizations to be quite open and quite willing to talk about, one, what they're doing and what the needs of the community are, and also looking forward to having somebody else, another church in the community, stepping in and helping and pick up the slack for some of the things that are still not, you know, some of the unmet needs that still exist there. So it's a very good process. And it is a lot of work, and so you want to do a good job in enlisting the right people to be involved in it, and you want to do good interviews, and then you need somebody, at least one person is going to take responsibility for writing that up, putting it in written form so that it's usable. And this book, Churches That Make a Difference, Ron Sider, they talk about, you know, effective community needs assessments, and one caveat that they give about that, which is certainly true, is that the community needs assessment is a work in and of itself. I mean, it is. And then when you're done, you can sit back and pat yourself on the back and really be happy about it. You know, hold it up, maybe put one in a frame, all that kind of thing, and just be real happy about the work that you did. Only thing is, don't let it stop there. The whole purpose for it is a practical purpose, and that is that you're going to take it, use it to develop some clear-cut objective goals and action plans. And this wonderful instrument, I only gave you a piece of it, a part of it, but in the very back part, it's got processes to use to go through to help the church prioritize ministries once you've gone through and done all this analysis, to really be able to prioritize both from the church's current abilities to be able to deal with developing new ministries, to what the needs are. Out of all that, analyze and set priorities, and then develop a strategy plan for actually being able to, execute new ministry. So it's very good. This material is very good, and the community needs assessment is a good process. But in every single one that I do, what I seek to do, along with finding the needs in the community, is to also, provide to the church or whoever it is I'm doing the needs assessment for, with good information about resources that are available to help them be able to establish these ministries, and also to see who among those agencies would be willing to work with a church or to have people from a church come and work alongside them and being able to accomplish the work that they're going to do. In one situation, in one case where the church really never did anything with it. They did have an excellent opportunity to work with, I think, the One Stop Center. Anyway, as part of the Department of Families and Children. They have these job ministries, job training ministries, and they were looking for sites to be able to set that up, to coordinate those. And they relished the idea of being able to do that in a church. And what they said was, and the person I was talking to was a Christian, and he said, look, when we're, and this is what I think you're going to hear Kathy Miller say, when we're in there doing the job training work, that is what we need to do, what needs to take place. But there's no reason why the church, especially after you get started, can't have some kind of fellowship activity before the classes start, or after the classes start, or at other times, or have other ways to collect and get the names and addresses and you know, if the people give it willingly, voluntarily, and go out and visit them and seek to make them, you know, prospects for the church and to conduct ministries, or to have New Testaments and tracts and other information for, about the church available so that the people, when they come or they leave, can take that. So there's no reason why you can't do that. So there's all kinds of ways in which we can share the gospel while we're working alongside secular organizations and doing ministry or providing services to people, what they would consider services for us, our ministry. So it's another way for us to be able to accomplish that. So those are the kind of things that I like to look for and like to include in a community needs assessment. And this includes some of the questions, you know, to help engage the people in conversation. What services, on page 13 of this outline, what services do you provide? What are the qualifications for receiving your services? What are the strengths you see in this community? All those kind of things. And I think in most of mine, I kind of condense that and make that into three or four, maybe five questions. The main thing is to engage the people in conversation. And as you engage them in conversation about the community, you use this as a guide, and you're going to extrapolate all that information from them. But in most cases, just engaging them in conversation and allowing them to share will allow for all the information you're looking for in this to surface, and you'll be able to glean all that. And then take it back, compile it, and put it together so that it's in a usable form, and then use it to help develop ministries for the church and hopefully collaborate or develop new collaborative relationships with others in the community, which without doing this may not have had the opportunity to do or may never have thought about doing. And you may find those relationships very rich and very rewarding.
Thanks so much for choosing to listen to the Church Planting Podcast. You can listen to additional podcasts or sign up to receive the weekly edition by logging on to nam.net/CPG podcast. That URL once again is namb.net/CPG podcast. We also want to remind you to discover thousands of resources that are available to church planters and church planting leaders at our website, www.churchplantingvillage.net. While you're there, sign up to receive our e-magazine, The Planter's Update. It's filled with practical tools that can help you in your planting journey. You can receive it today by logging on to www.churchplantingvillage.net/update. Reaching America, Canada, and beyond, this is your Church Planting Podcast. Thanks again for listening.